You're listening to a download from North Sound 2. Listen again.
Good morning and welcome to a phone-in special on the referendum right across Scotland with me, Colin Mackay. Joining me this morning is First Minister Alex Salmond. He's had talks with the Scottish Secretary, talks with the Prime Minister, even talks with Rupert Murdoch. But today he's in talks with you. To get through, all you have to do is call 0845 500 1152. But this is a bit different from most radio phone-ins. This is your chance to respond directly to the Scottish Government's referendum consultation and maybe get a quick response from the First Minister. Whatever you have to say or whatever questions you have about plans for a referendum or for independence, then this is your chance. So call now on 0845 500 1152. But First Minister, first of all, good morning. Saturday,
good morning.
18th of October 2014, is that going to be the referendum date?
Well, I read it this morning, but it was a possible date, of course, because we said it would be in the autumn of 2014, and we also said we were considering a Saturday as opposed to a Thursday to increase turnout. But, you know, we're only a month into a three-month consultation. I think the last check I made, we've got 2,700 responses already, so we're heading perhaps towards up to 10,000 responses to the consultation. And once all of these are in and analysed, then we'll announce what the date will be, not till after the consultation.
But are you happy to go with a Saturday for the referendum?
There are arguments for a Saturday, and we put these in the consultation paper. Basically, there's some evidence it increases turnout, and obviously something as important as a referendum on the future of Scotland, you want to hold it on a day where the maximum number of people are able to vote. I mean, the suggestion is it increases turnout by about 4 or 5%. So on that basis, Saturday has to be a strong runner, but we'll wait to see what the consultation says.
So you're not ruling it out, but it's an option.
It's certainly a possibility. Saturday is definitely a possibility because we put it in the consultation document. Actually, if you examine the autumn of 2014 and you accept that we want to not do it during the Commonwealth Games, for example, in August, we don't want to do it in the Ryder Cup in September, there's only a relatively few number of dates that would be suitable.
Because that's the middle of the tatty holidays.
Well, there's pros and cons, of course, in every date, but the best thing to do is to look at the time that will give the maximum number of people the maximum opportunity to vote. So it's a possibility, but we'll decide after the full consultation.
I've no doubt we'll come back to the timing, but first of all, we're going to go to Evelyn, who's on the line. Evelyn, what's your point for the First Minister this morning?
Good morning, Mr. Salmond.
Good morning, Evelyn.
I hope we get our independence. One question I would like to ask is, have you any plans to update the railway system, you know, between Glasgow and here or Edinburgh?
Well, I hope we get our independence as well, Evelyn. And yes, we've got fairly substantial plans. Two things. One, in terms of Aberdeen and Inverness, then we believe that through dual tracking in some parts of the line, for example, near Stonehaven, still single tracking, and the Inverness line has a lot of single tracking as well, that we can take quite a considerable amount of time off the journey, and that plans are being laid out at the present moment. And between Glasgow and Edinburgh, of course, the plan is for electrification of the service, which will reduce the times for that key journey in Scotland even further. But, you know, I like to, when we're making these points, I like to point out that, you know, it's really important that we get the journey times down from Aberdeen to the Central Belt and the Central Belt to Inverness. I mean, it's really important that...
But you don't have to wait for independence for that, do you?
Well, no, we're working... It's quite interesting, actually. It's one of the very few areas which the Scottish Government effectively can borrow for capital investment. We do it through Network Rail. And Network Rail has the ability as a company to borrow, and we support their borrowing. And as a result, we've had a substantial, huge investment plans in the railways in Scotland. I mean, new lines have been created, like the Bathgate Airdrie line, which is the biggest commuter line for a century. The Borders Railway is under planning at the present moment. So, and it's actually a good example of why we need independence, because with independence, the same idea of Network Rail borrowing at very, very keen rates and for capital investment in the future of the country, we could be doing the same thing with Scottish Water, for example. We could have a huge expansion of the capital investment of Scottish Water as a company if they had the same ability as Network Rail on the same basis to borrow for capital investment. So, you know, Network Rail is actually one of the very few areas where we have flexibility. And what we've tried to do, Evelyn, is use that flexibility as hard and quick as we can to build up the railway network in Scotland.
Well, there's lots of calls coming in on 0845 500 1152. We're going to go to Joe. Joe, what's your point for the First Minister this morning?
Morning, Mr. Salmon.
Good morning, Joe.
Hi. My question is, in your honest opinion, would Scotland have the finances and resources to run our own affairs as an independent nation? I'm asking this question because people like me, who are considered the Grey voters, are concerned about the pensions and continuity of quality of life.
Can you give Joe any reassurances about his pensions if you win this referendum?
Well, yes, I can. And the straight answer to Joe's question is yes. And you can argue this in two ways, Joe. But one, if you look at what Scotland contributes and what we get at the present moment, if you take the last 5 years, for example, then we've contributed to the UK Exchequer £7.2 billion more than has been spent in Scotland. That's been a relative surplus, which is about £1,400 a head for every man, woman and child in Scotland. But as far as pensions directly is concerned, the state pensions, these are backed by the state pension fund. Scotland is entitled to our share of the state pension fund, and they'll be continued to be paid as is. And private sector pensions, of course, are private sector funds, and they're equally, these are paid to people on their entitlement. Of course, one of the great arguments that's taking place just now is that people who previously thought their pension levels were safe in terms of the UK government are finding that's not the case. In the private sector, we've had huge scandals like Equitable Life, for example, where many people ended up much poorer as a result of mismanagement and misregulation of that company. And in the state sector just now, even people who renegotiated their pensions 2 or 3 years ago are finding that the UK government wants to renegotiate them again, almost without accord to the surpluses
in
the pension funds.
Joe, what's your worry about your pension?
Well, I've got my old age pension, an army pension and a company pension. I've worked all my life for these, and I would hate to see them jeopardised.
Are you convinced by what the First Minister's telling you that they won't be jeopardised?
Oh, I'm very well convinced that they won't be jeopardised. I wish to thank Alec very much, and I'll be voting yes in the referendum.
Joe, thanks for your
thank
call.
Thank you, Joe.
Jimmy's on the line now. Jimmy, what's your question for the First Minister?
Well, I'm for independence, Alec, with a question mark. What kind of independent Scotland are we going to have? Is it going to be an independent Scotland that's going to honour the public sector pensions? Is it going to be an independent Scotland that's going to get nuclear arms and use that money for the benefit of the people of Scotland?
Well, actually, your second question, yes. I mean, it's a long-standing... I mean, an independent Scotland would have no need for nuclear weapons, and the biggest concentration of weapons of mass destruction in the continent of Europe, and £100 billion, incidentally, that the UK government intends to spend over the next few generations in developing a new generation of Trident missiles. I think we could all think of 100 better things to spend our share of that investment on. On the first point, then, we've tried our best to honour all our obligations. It's very difficult at the present moment because, obviously, the bulk of the funding of these decisions is made by Westminster. I mean, the difficulty I've got with what the UK government's doing with public sector pensions just now is twofold. I think it's unreasonable to ask people for an immediate financial impost while they're undergoing substantial wage restraint. And it's not necessary, incidentally, in the calculations. And the second thing is, there doesn't seem to be any discrimination or determination between each pension fund. You know, they're treating all pension funds if they were in the same position, and that's palpably not true. And that's causing a lot of grievance and an upset.
Are you concerned, First Minister, at the threat of a fireman's strike at the moment over pensions, and there is anything you can do to stop that in Scotland?
Well, we'll do our absolute best. I mean, we've had a very good relationship with the Fire Brigade Union. I think they would back that up as well. A whole range of things. With regard to terms and conditions, the atmosphere has substantially improved since the SNP government took office. But can you do
anything to stop them going on strike about their pension?
Well, we've had talks with the FBU again. They were in the hands of the Treasury in terms of the negotiation of pensions. But I certainly hope that strikes can be averted in terms of the emergency service. And I know the FBU think that as well. And hopefully we'll be able to use a good relationship to try and offset the danger of such a strike.
Morag's on the line. Morag, what's your question for the First Minister this morning?
Good morning, First Minister. After David Cameron's visit where he said he would be open to looking at further devolution, Ruth Davidson clarified the situation on Newsnight last Monday night and said that what that would actually be would be the enactment of the current Scotland Bill after the 2015 general election. So basically what they're asking us to do is vote no in the referendum with no very clear idea of what, if anything, will be the end result.
Well, now, you brought this up with the Scottish Secretary last week, didn't you?
Yeah, kind of did.
And he didn't really answer you, did he?
What I'd like to ask the First Minister is, given that the Tories are asking us to vote for the pig in the poke, will the Scottish Government and the SNP make it very, very clear in absolute detail to the people of Scotland what they will be voting for in the referendum in 2014?
First Minister.
Straight answer is yes, Morag. And part of our timetable to the referendum is next year the publication of a white paper, which will set out in enormous detail, even bigger detail than was set out thus far, what we're asking people to endorse in the proposition that will be put forward by the Scottish Government. Now, I don't think it's unreasonable, if given a debate, if we're prepared to do that, to ask the other parties to do the same thing, the anti-independence parties, led by the Tories, of course. I'm old enough, Morag, to remember Alec Douglas-Hume, a former Tory Prime Minister, who way back, when I was still at school, of course, actually, I think I was at university, and he gave the people in Scotland, he told them to vote against devolution in 1979 on the assurance that a better bill, a better form of Scottish Parliament would be offered by any Tory government. Of course, what actually happened wasn't a better deal.
But what if they offer before the referendum? What if they don't say wait until afterwards, we'll tell you what we're going to do beforehand? Would that be a good option to put on your ballot paper?
Well, there's two aspects to this. Firstly, they've got to clarify what they mean. And incidentally, I mean, I think Morag said that Ruth Davidson clarified things. I think she further muddied the waters, actually, because you see, in the talk.
Should it be on the ballot paper,
well,
do you think?
I was about to make a revelation.
Go on, reveal then.
In the talks that I had with David Cameron, where obviously this matter came up, because he'd said it that morning, he actually accepted at one point that they would have to spell things out before the referendum. So it does seem to me that if that is accepted, whatever Ruth Davidson's got to say, she's got this balancing act. She's trying to accommodate David Cameron on the one hand and Michael Forsyth on the other, and that's a kind of unbridgeable divide. They're going to have to do that, aren't they? And therefore it opens the question, if it's a serious form of devolution, you're separate from the Scotland Bill, separate from what we've got at the present moment, then why are they so against having that option or another option on the ballot paper? So it doesn't seem to make sense to me. They can't substantially believe they can keep this matter secret from the people to referendum day. And if they're going to spell it out, why are they frightened of having it on a ballot paper?
Well, what about a straight runoff? A yes, one or the other? Not necessarily a yes or a no, but do you want Devo Plus, Devo Max, call it what you will, or independence? Well, would you accept one question offering the choice between the two?
Well, we've put a consultation out, as you know, and I'm trying to keep an open mind on these matters. But it's certainly the case, as some people have pointed out over the last couple of weeks, that if the anti-independence parties led by the Tories were prepared to say what their alternative was, then it would open up that as a possibility. Now, I'm in a position that, I know where we want to go, I know where we want to take Scotland forward to independence. We're going to spell out the details, as Morag rightly demanded a few seconds ago in a white paper. I think it's entirely reasonable, and a subject as important as the future of this country, that the anti-independence parties are prepared to be as transparent as we are being.
Why are you pushing so hard for that more devolved powers option to be on the ballot paper when it's not what you want? Is it a belt and braces approach that you're guaranteed something rather than nothing if you don't win an independence?
I think when people vote in a referendum, they have to know the consequences of both a yes vote and the consequences of a no vote. And I'm interested in people having that clarified before they go into the polling station on a day in the autumn of 2014 and take part in the most important vote in this country for 300 years. I want people to have all the facts.
OK, we're going to go to another call now. David's on the line. David, what's your question for the First Minister?
Yes, good morning, and good morning, Alec.
Good morning, David.
I'd like to know a confirmation from you that the Scottish Government and the people of Scotland will continue to show allegiance to the Crown and to Her Majesty the Queen and her heirs. And following that, I'd like to know what role you envisage for the royal family once we get full independence in Scotland.
Well, I'm glad to confirm that. As you know, I've pursued this point very strongly, in a positive vein, incidentally. The role would be that of a constitutional monarchy. That's what monarchy is in the modern world, that's right. I mean, the Scottish Parliament, democratically elected, decides the policies of the country. But a monarchy can have a very substantial role as a constitutional monarchy in terms of binding the country together. The other aspect of this is, I've always found of interest, because we're arguing for political independence for Scotland. But that doesn't mean we don't want to continue the social union with other countries in these islands. And to me, the monarchy and the tradition has always represented an aspect of that social union that I think we should embrace as a country. And therefore, I think it's a very positive affirmation of how relationships between Scotland and England will continue after independence. I think they'll be on a better, more equal footing. And I always think an equal relationship is better than any other one.
Does that make you more or less likely to support independence in a referendum, David?
Well, I'm supporting independence anyway, but yes, I'm glad. I mean, Alex just confirmed what I think I already knew, but I thought it was important for that to be made clear on this programme, because there'll be a lot of people listening, and it'll reassure a lot of people who do want the relationship with the monarchy to continue.
Might not reassure the Republicans, though. Anyway, this is a special referendum. Phone in with me, Colin McKay, and First Minister Alex Salmond. The number to call wherever you are in Scotland is 0845 511 52, and we'll take more of your calls in just a moment.
North Sound 2. Listen again.
And the calls are coming in thick and fast. We've got Joe on the line. Joe, what's your question for the First Minister?
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Everybody. Well, I'd like to know why, Mr. Salmon, why you're pushing so hard to get independence. I mean, I don't want independence. We've been British for quite a long time now, without fighting against England and all that. And on your passports, it's British. We're not actually classed as Scottish. I mean, I remember one time in Spain, when a woman came in to change a £20 note, and it was Scottish, and they wouldn't take it. They wouldn't understand what it was. And they had every £20 note in the world in this book, and yet there were no Scottish pound note, or no £20 note.
First Minister, 305 years of shared history. Why break it now? If it's not broke, why fix it?
Well, actually, Joe just gave his illustration, one of the reasons why we should be independent. I mean, the reason, Joe, that they didn't change that woman's £20 note in Spain is because Scotland wasn't an independent country. And although we had our own banknotes, they weren't noted in the book that was being consulted precisely because we weren't an independent country. Can I just say, Joe, that I don't want to fight with anyone. My proposition on independence is that the folk who are best placed to run Scotland are the people who live in Scotland. And I think we can now demonstrate that beyond any argument. Because now that we've had the devolved parliament for the last 12 years, we run things like the health service. Now, we run a decent health service. Well, okay. The health service of Scotland has record rates of satisfaction at the present moment. There's going to be new hospitals as well in that area, Joe. But the point I was going to make to you, would you prefer it was run by Andrew Lansley in England at the present moment, where the entire health service are demonstrating against his plans to privatise it? You see, if we didn't run the health service, then we'd be faced with the privatisation that's going on south of the border at the present moment.
Joe?
And if it's a good thing for the health service, I suspect it's a good thing that we run everything else as well.
Joe?
Well, I don't agree with that.
First Minister, do you accept that there's folk like Joe that you're just never going to convince?
Well, I don't actually. I believe...
So he's not a lost cause yet, then?
I wouldn't describe anybody in Scotland as a lost cause. I absolutely believe, because more and more folk over the years, when I started out in politics, the SNP had three MPs in total. And folks said we'd never get a Scottish Parliament. Now we've got a Scottish Parliament. Then they said we'd never have an SNP government in a Scottish Parliament. We got one. Then they said that government would never be re-elected and get elected with massive majorities in places like Kirkcaldy, where Joe stays. And we got elected with massive majorities in places like Kirkcaldy. So when folks say now, some folk will never believe or support independence, I don't believe that. I think if you put the arguments reasonably and positively and have a vision of the future and spell out the advantages of Scotland running its own affairs, the people in Scotland running this country, then everyone has a chance of subscribing to that. I can't make it compulsory.
Well, if that's the case, then why wait until 2014? Why not do it next year, as the Scottish Secretary suggests? He says he's laid out a timetable. You could do it physically. You could do it through the Parliament. Why not do that?
Precisely because of the questions your listeners have been asking. I want Scots to have the time to get answers, folk like Joe and all the others who've been on who were supportive of independence, but had to have questions answered. I want people to have the time so that we can explain exactly what independence means. This is a huge decision for Scotland, and I think we should take our time, do it in a considered fashion and answer people's questions. The Scottish Secretary, the reason he wants to jump ahead, he didn't even want a referendum when the Liberal Democrats were humiliated in Scotland last year. Now he wants to run the referendum from London. These days are over. We'll run this referendum in our own time in Scotland, and the people of Scotland, best placed to decide the future of this country, will take their decision in that good time.
But aren't you going for October 2014 just because it's in the run-up to the general election? You think the Tories might form a majority government down south and that might scare voters into voting for independence here?
No, because if people are voting, and it's a very legitimate thing for people to look at the government in London and say, thank goodness that's not running the health service or the universities or all the other things they're making a muck of.
So you think that will help you, though?
Well, they could do that now. We've got a Tory government in London at the present moment. People see the damage that Tory government's doing, and they thank the lucky stars. Most people thank the lucky stars that we've got a Scottish Parliament which is able to protect Scotland in some key areas. But, of course, my argument is, if we controlled the finances of Scotland, then we could extend that protection across the range of things to the economy so that Scotland would be better off, so that this would be a more socially just society. So I want a prosperous country and a just society, and you can only do that if you control the purse strings and the resources.
Back to the phone lines, 0845 511 52. Willie's in the line. Willie, what's your point this morning?
Hi, I would just like to say that when Mrs. Thatcher was in the government, the Tory government, she hurt us with this poll tax. No problem. That was all right. We paid the poll tax. She hurt England with it. What happened? The riots. New Mr. Cameron, he says, we've been far better off sticking together. We've been better off. Better off? What about all the people that are unemployed in Scotland that they took over with industry down south, left us in the brew? If that's what he thinks, before I better sticking with him, I wouldn't like to see him fighting against us.
First Minister, 231,000 Scots unemployed. Do you think that damages your case for independence? Suggests that, well, maybe you're not dealing with that side of the government well enough? Because it's not as well as you'd like, is it?
No, but I think it makes the point that Willie's making, that we should control our own resources in Scotland, we should control our own job creation policies, so that if we can match the resources to the talents of the Scottish people, we can re-industrialise Scotland in the same way that the Tories de-industrialised Scotland back in the 1980s under Margaret Thatcher. Now, if we can get that vision across of re-industrialising Scotland, particularly through our energy industries, where we've got unparalleled resources across Europe, then, of course, that's a vision that many folk will buy into, not just Willie in terms of saying the Tories damaged Scotland, therefore we shouldn't listen to them. That seems to me a good argument, incidentally. But also saying, look at the future we can have for Scotland. You know, one of the most logical things that folks say to me around Scotland, they say, look, you see, if the Tories actually thought Scotland was a subsidised place, instead of being desperate to hang on to us, which is what they are just now, they'd be trying to shove us away. So the very fact that people like Cameron and Osborne are trying desperately to hang on to Scotland and its resources should tell you that Scotland's a very good bet economically if we control these resources.
They make the argument that we heard just a few minutes ago from Joe, that the 305 years of shared history is what drives them to fight for the union.
Well, you know, I always think if you're
you don't believe them, clearly.
Well, no, I don't. I think the Tories are after Scotland's resources. I think that in particular about George Osborne. And the reason is when you do talks with the Chancellor of the Exchequer, as soon as you get on to Scotland's oil and gas revenues, then his eyes glaze over. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt that the reason he wants to hang on to Scotland is not some sentimental attachment to the Union. He wants to hang on to Scotland because he wants to hang on to Scottish resources. I think David Cameron's case, I think he's a bit frightened of being seen as the Tory Prime Minister who lost Scotland, you know, like George III lost America all these years ago. And therefore, it's really important that when we are arguing the case for independence, we argue it in a positive sense about having a new relationship with all the countries in these islands, but one where the people who live in Scotland are the people who run Scotland.
Joe's on the line. Joe, what's your question for the First Minister this morning?
Good morning, Alec.
Good morning, Joe.
Hiya. What baffles me is why you would want to hang on to the royal family and not become a republic.
Well, I can answer that question earlier on when somebody phoned up about it. I think that there's two arguments for it. One is that I think a constitutional monarchy is perfectly in line with Scotland's traditions. If we go back through history, we always had the monarchy in a special place. I mean, right back to the days of Robert the Bruce, where the community of the realm of Scotland said to Robert the Bruce they would make him their king, but also if he ever turned his back in Scotland, they would get somebody else. And that was a good tradition to have.
Living in Robert Bruce's days, Alex.
No, I'm just saying that that's the idea of a constitutional monarchy. I don't think people should see the monarchy as anything other than something ingrained in Scottish history. But the second argument, I think, is very important as well. And that is, I'm trying to get across the argument that Scotland would become politically independent, a democratic country, controlling its own resources, but we'd still have a relationship with other countries across these islands. And I think the monarchy, the royal family, is a symbol of that social union that I want to continue after political independence is achieved for Scotland.
You used to say you'd have a referendum on the monarchy if Scotland was independent. Would you still go along with that, or would you just keep them?
No,
I'd prefer not to have the monarchy.
Let the First Minister answer then,
Jill. We kind of detected that one, Jill, but I think we put forward our policy because of retaining the monarchy, and we put it forward clearly. And I think we'd have
No referendum after the referendum? Referendum on the monarchy anymore?
That's correct. That's been our policy for a number of years, and that's what we'll put forward. But the reason for that is quite obvious as well. We have to, as I spelt out to one of the other callers earlier on, we have to set out next year in a white paper our proposition about Scottish independence. And I think we have to do that in as much detail as we possibly can, and we're going to do that. And I don't think we can have ifs and buts in that either. We have to set it out clearly and straightforwardly to the people of Scotland and then ask them to vote yes.
0845 511 52. Brian's on the line next. Brian, what's your point this morning?
Hi, good morning. I see Rupert Murdoch's lending his campaign to independence, and I exactly believe that, given that fact, that that's the kiss of death to the SNP's attempts to gain independence for Scotland.
I think he's saying, with friends like these, who needs enemies?
Well, I would say that would, let's see, if you argued that line, it would apply to every political party there is at the present moment. As I remember, it wasn't at the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, who had sleepovers in Downing Streets and parties at Exchequer. Three things that I'd say about this. One, I think it's right, the criminal law is being applied to the newspaper industry, and that should continue. Two, I think it's absolutely right that News International should clean up their act, and that should continue. And three, the Leveson inquiry absolutely demonstrates, beyond any peradventure, we're not talking here about one newspaper or one newspaper group, the bad practices were right across the industry. And therefore, if you take that line, and then you would say, well, you would never talk to any newspaper proprietor ever. Now, that's just not a realistic position to put forward. And lastly, I'd say this. Should remember that News International, I think, are Scotland's second biggest private sector employer. They employ, I think, just under 7,000 jobs between the printing operations and B Sky B in Scotland. And that's a big contribution to the Scottish economy, and we shouldn't forget that.
So with your campaign for independence, you've finally managed to unite Rupert Murdoch and Tommy Sheridan.
Well, that point was made. I mean, my interest is in uniting as broad a consensus of people in Scotland and internationally as I possibly can. They tell me that Donald Trump might have fallen out of the coalition.
Ian's on the line now. Ian, what's your point for the First Minister this morning?
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was just wondering, what currency will we be using in Scotland? Because the Scottish currency is not welcomed anywhere in the world, even just south of the border, and I'm not blaming them for doing it, because there's that many forgeries going about. The country is flooded with forgery money.
Ian, before we do that, are you for or against independence at the moment?
Well, I'm against it 100%.
You're against it. Why are you against it?
Well, it's solid. Here's unemployment for a start. We have got a 250,000 people unemployed, and we've got the nationalists talking about what apples they've got in their gardens in Holyrood. I'm sure there's more to talk about than apples. And in fact, another Nat said she's learnt more about apples this week than she's ever known in her life.
Well, let's not waste time on apples this morning, Ian. First Minister,
two points about Ian. I've proposed that we continue with sterling. We have a sterling zone. There are 67 countries across the world share currencies, and that would seem to me a rather effective thing to do at the present moment. But just to argue Ian's point, I mean, Ian says employment, that's the number of folk in jobs in Scotland, Ian, is higher than it is elsewhere in the UK. 70.7% of people in Scotland are in employment. The UK figure is 70.3%. In fact, we're higher than any individual country.
But we're going
in the
up
UK.
Higher than the rest of the UK at the moment, aren't we?
Sorry?
The most recent figures showed a bigger increase in Scotland than in other parts
but
of the UK.
That's looking at unemployment, but economic activity is higher in Scotland. We've got more folk in jobs. And sometimes, I would argue, it's better to look at the number of folk you've got in jobs, because obviously people only declare themselves looking for a job if they think they've got a hope of finding one. And often when you see, if you take, for example, Northern Ireland just now, which is where the economy incidentally is improving, thank goodness, as a result of that.
They've got lower unemployment than we have, 7.2%.
And they've got a massively lower employment rate, because a lot of folk in Northern Ireland, particularly women, are not in the labour force. They don't think they've got any chance whatsoever. So you should look at the jobs figures as well as looking at the unemployment figures. But the point I was going to make to Ian, if we said, you know, we should be independent, if we've got more jobs, folk in jobs than there are, for example, in England, then his argument would be we should be independent. So it's not the greatest argument. I think we'd do a lot better economically if Scotland becomes an independent country. But the key argument, and the key thing that really matters, is that this country should be run by the people who live in this country. They'll do it better than anyone else.
Angela's on the line. Angela, what's your question this morning?
Yes, good morning. Hello, Alec. How are
good
you?
Good morning, Angela.
Yeah. The thing is, why do you not put people out in the street that I can't get money for the benefit? Why do you not get them on the street and get them doing cutting grass, fixing streets and everything? Let them earn their money. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous.
No, it's fine, Angela. I think this is one of the problems that the government's facing down south at the moment, First Minister.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy with the idea that people in jobs should always be better off. I think there always should be an incentive to be in employment. And so when the UK government said that was going to be their approach to benefits and things, I was quite supportive of that principle. I think it's right. But now, because now we find out through this scandal that's unfolding south of the border at the present moment, the resignation of the lady who was in charge and given lots of public money by the Westminster government to get folk into jobs, we find out the people going into these jobs weren't any better off than if they hadn't been working. They were getting exactly the same, and all these big companies are now withdrawing from that scheme because they don't want to be seen as exploiting people. Now, two things strike me as quite important here. One is, if that scheme had a merit in getting people used to working again, I can see that merit. Why didn't people just get, even if it was a wee bit more, for getting back into work than they would if they were unemployed, in this principle about you should always earn more if you're working? And secondly, why couldn't that be done as we do or try to do in Scotland with our training schemes? You know, from we've got, 25,000 modern apprenticeships in Scotland this year, 60% higher than a few years ago, 125,000 over the next 5 years. And we run that through a public sector organisation called Skill Development Scotland. And everybody knows it's absolutely square. Nobody's earning secret millions behind the scenes in that organisation. It's run by professional civil servants and communication with the private sector in Scotland to place all these modern apprenticeships. Why do we need this company, the one that's in such controversy south of the border, in order to place people into jobs? Why can't that be done fairly and squarely through the public sector instead of this, which I think is not just a major scandal, but a major disaster that's unfolding for the Westminster government at the present moment?
This is a special referendum. Phone in with me, Colin McKay, First Minister Alex Salmond. The number to call wherever you are in Scotland is 0845 500 1152. And we'll take more of your calls in just a moment.
North Sound 2. Listen again.
Calls are coming in thick and fast. 0845 500 1152. Still time to get them in and get your question to the First Minister. Trisha's on the line. Trisha, what's your question this morning?
My question's about youth unemployment. I was wondering if Alex would think about, for people who, instead of putting up the pension age, bringing it back down, giving youth a chance to get into work. Because what chance have they got ever getting a job if they're going to put up the pension age?
A rotten phone line, Tricia, so I'm going to put that straight to the First Minister. Bring down the retirement age. Would you do that in an independent Scotland, First Minister?
No, but I think we can concentrate on how to get young folk into jobs. And I think some of the things we're doing are absolutely right. I think we've got more to do, which is why I've appointed the First Minister for Youth Employment anywhere in these islands. But the things we're doing, modern apprenticeships are one of the great keys to this. We've now got 25,000 a year, 125,000 over the next 5 years. Every modern apprentice in Scotland has a job. This is the absolute key to skill training. People attached to jobs, not folk just been trained without a prospect of employment but in a job.
So what would the retirement age be in that independent Scotland, 66, 67?
Well, the plan to move the retirement age gradually upwards I think is a reasonable proposition at the present moment. But it's been the cool thing, Tricia, was youth unemployment, and I think the next key thing is this guarantee that we are now offering, the first ever time it's ever been offered, and that is every single person, everyone, who's not in a job, an apprenticeship or in full-time education will be offered an educational training opportunity. So nobody will be left out. Every single person between the ages of 60 and 19 will be given that offer. And that's going to require mobilisation between the government and the colleges and the other training establishments. A huge mobilisation to make that possible. But it can be done. It should be done. It will be done.
Are you willing to accept that the retirement age in an independent Scotland would be higher than the life expectancy in some parts of the country?
Well, that's. I'm not willing to accept anything. I'm saying that the life expectancy, which is lower in some areas of Scotland than elsewhere, disgracefully actually, but still has been moving upwards, and it's moving upwards right across the board. And I think what you do socially has to reflect that reality. But the reality that Tricia's drawing our attention to quite rightly. Is a substantial numbers of young folk who are looking for a proper chance in life. And we've got to focus on the people who are not in training or apprenticeship or in education and make sure they get an opportunity too, so they don't get left behind. I'm suspicious sometimes, because there's, I think, about 35% in Scotland, because we've got so many people in college and university compared to elsewhere. 35% of what's often described as youth unemployment are actually folk in full-time education. But I think we have to focus on the people who are not in full-time education, in training or in a job or an apprenticeship. We must reach these people. And that's why this 16 to 19-year-old guarantee is there for everyone. Every single person will get that offer. And I think that's really important in Scotland right now.
Lois is next on the line. Lois, what's your question this morning?
Hi, Mr. Salmond. This is Lois Meldon from Arbroath. I actually find myself on disability living allowance and income support. Incapacity, and I've worked since I was 14 years old. But the reason I find myself in is I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, but not by a GP, because I was deemed as being depressed by GPs. Now, I've had symptoms of ovarian cancer from 1993 and had one investigation of that. They found cysts on several occasions and ultrasounds. And I'm taking my chance now to talk to you, because I've been trying to get in touch with yourself, Nicola Sturgeon and Jerry Marr, and nobody's helped me.
So what specific help do you want, Lois?
I want somebody to investigate all this. The surgeon already agreed with myself that these cysts had been there for years, and now I'm now being fobbed off. And they're telling me, they're not telling me anything, actually.
Can I undertake that Lois will be contacted after the programme, and then there'll be a discussion to see with her particular individual problem whether there's any help or advice that can be given. Mm. But secondly, there's the general thing I want to make about disability living allowance. You know, some of the changes that are being made in terms of Social Security just now, at least the principle, which I agree with, I, as I said earlier on, actually agree that it's important that people who are in work have an incentive to be in work. I think work should pay. I'm deeply concerned about some of the changes that have been made, particularly incidentally to disability living allowance. I recounted I think a conference speech last year how I met somebody during the election campaign last year in Kilmarnock who broke down in tears, and she described to me how her disability living allowance was critical in terms of sustaining her employment and her family and keeping it together. I just think some of the things which are now further gone have been ill thought through. They're causing a great deal of upset and misery to people in that category. They're not necessary. They shouldn't be done. And I think it's another argument, incidentally, why we should control these things in Scotland. It's similar to us controlling other things in Scotland. But in terms of Lewis's individual case, I'll make sure she's contacted.
We'll
after
get your number. Next on the line's Davey. Davey, what's your point this morning?
Hi, morning, First Minister.
Morning, Davey.
I was being a former career soldier. My question is, in an independent Scotland, what would the armed forces structure look like?
David, we'll have a Scottish Defence Force encompassing. We reckon the budget will be about £2.5 billion. We'll retain the traditions of the Scottish Armed Forces. I don't know if you've seen all the papers today, but you'll see there's now a threat to the name of the Black Watch in the Royal Regiment of Scotland. Not just the fact it's no longer an individual regiment, but actually the name being extinguished, which I'm fiercely opposed to. It would leave only Canada, incidentally, as the only place where there was a Black Watch insignia left, and I really think that's a dreadful proposition that the UK government, Ministry of Defence, are putting forward. So we'd have a Scottish Defence Force. I think there's two big arguments for having a Scottish Defence Force. Firstly, it would allow us to concentrate in conventional defence, something we're good at. Our army, our soldiers are respected across the world, as opposed to nuclear weapons, which we would not require. And secondly, of course, when it comes to participating in international events, then we should participate on legal events where you can be of help to people and assistance which are sanctioned by the United Nations, and we shouldn't participate in illegal wars like the war in Iraq, which caused desperate difficulty. Despite the bravery of our soldiers who were sent there, the politicians, particularly Tony Blair, who sent them there under false pretences, should hang their heads in shame.
Davey, is that a big enough defence force for you, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think, I know time's running short, but I think Alex and the SNP would have to have the armed forces, you know, for the independence, because I think but that then mean they would be based only in Scotland rather than being posted around the world and things like that. So I think you have to convince the people in armed forces that there is a good future in an independent Scotland.
Is this a difficult debate for you, Alex?
No, I think it's a very good debate for us, particularly because one of the good things a lot of bad things came out of the defence review last year. We lost two of our air bases in Scotland, for example, which was really hard blows for folk in Kinloss and Lookers. But one of the good things that did come out of it was the whole idea of the Mobile Brigade based in Scotland, which would tell you very, very closely that that's the sort of defence force that an independent Scotland would like to have. And of course, that is based in Scotland, as opposed to being based, as Davey will know only too well, and actually permanently based in places like Germany at the present moment.
OK, I'm squeezing calls in here. Graham, what's a quick question for the First Minister?
Quick question, Mr. Salmond. You spoke about Stirling a few minutes ago. I was under the impression that because of the Lisbon Treaty, if Scotland went independent, we would have to go with the euro. Is that correct?
No, it's not, Graham. I can give you two arguments for it. I can give you the legal argument, because Scotland would not be an accession state, would be part of the European Union in a dissolution of the Union, would have the same rights, would be an inheritor state for treaty obligations we have, including a right to opt out of the euro. But secondly, even if we hadn't been in that position, which we are, you just need to look at Sweden. Sweden was an accession state but hasn't adopted the euro because nobody's going to be forced into the euro. I think the euro's got enough problems with the member it's got without actually looking for any mayor.
Very, very quickly, Alan, what's a very quick question? Alan, can you hear me?
Hello, yes.
Hello, very quickly.
First Minister, can you tell me why the scaremongering tactics that's been used by companies in Scotland to say they're going to move from Scotland?
There we go, First Minister.
Well, I think there's a lot of politicisation of these arguments. You know, we're get the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Tories, Liberals, etc.
The other day said it might cause them problems.
Well, I thought it was very interesting. That wasn't how it was reported, of course, because what Scotland has said is they were staying their headquarters in Scotland, they would continue to invest, all investments would continue, and they saw themselves being in Scotland short, medium and long term. That wasn't reported, it should have been.
That's all we've got time for this morning. You can respond to the Scottish Government, the Scottish Office consultations on their websites. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Listen again to what you've missed and access exclusive online-only content at northsound2.com.